And you are listening to 102.5 FM right here in the heart of Cowhead, broadcasting throughout the region. We're joined on the line right now from with Bob Hooper, who's the director of the Bombay Marine Station. Hello, Bob.
Hello. How are you doing, Ivan?
Good, good. You've been working in the Bombay area for a long time. What attracts you to coming back every year? I mean, what is it about Bombay that seems to be so interesting for a marine scientist like yourself?
Well, I got hooked on it, I think, for a combination of reasons. I certainly came out to Bombay in the first place totally by accident, just invited to accompany some researchers from the department and help with a field trip. And the bribe to convince me to come along and help with them was that I could go diving from the boat they had hired from one of the fishermen, Abe Maynard, who died recently. And he took me to Gad's Point, and I went over the site, and I just about swallowed my regulator when I saw how high the biodiversity was. And I was swimming through swarms of redfish and pollock and mackerel, and I got attacked by a great big codfish. And being a seaweed specialist, I couldn't believe it when I was seeing all these Arctic species that I'd only ever seen illustrated in papers about the Arctic, and I was seeing them in Bombay, and nobody even had told me there was any possibility of anything like that. I think one dive, I found about 50 things that weren't even in the literature.
And you were hooked.
I've been addicted ever since.
Yeah. Have you seen things change in terms of the ecosystem there over the many years that you've been diving? Are we still seeing the same Arctic species there?
We're still seeing Arctic species. We are seeing a lot of unfortunate changes. The most obvious thing is the lack of fish compared to what we used to see. On a single dive off Gads or Red Point or someplace like that, we would normally have seen tens of thousands of redfish. Now, if I'm diving with students, they get really excited when they see one.
Oh, really?
The giant codfish that we used to have to watch out for are not a threat anymore. Mm-hmm. We get happy when we see a school of small cod.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you say, seaweed, which is one of your areas of specialty, have you seen changes in terms of species coming and going?
The biggest change of seaweeds is very recent, and it's when we got an invasive species in the bay, the Membranopora, or I think they call it sea lace. It came up from Nova Scotia, and it overgrows the kelp, and the kelp beds have been pretty well devastated by it, and the kelp beds were sheltering all kinds of other things, and all kinds of other animals and plants were growing on the kelp, so that's pretty scary. When you have the giant kelp beds, it's sort of like having the dominant species in a forest, and everything else depends on the dominant species. Mm-hmm. So when we lose the giant kelp, it's just scary to consider everything else that's threatened.
Mm-hmm. To move a little closer to where we're sitting right now, you've been interested in the St. Paul's Inlet, especially in the unique attributes of that. What is it about that area that interests you?
St. Paul's Inlet's a fabulous place. It's a fjord that's almost totally cut off from the sea. If the sea level was a few feet shallower, it would be a lake, because all the connection with the sea is that shallow water under the bridge and that little tiny narrow. So inside, it's incredibly isolated. It's a fascinating and unusual estuarine fjord ecology inside. And even more exciting to me on the outside is the salt marshes. The St. Paul salt marshes are some of the best salt marshes anywhere, and they're unique. They're not like the temperate salt marshes down in the Maritimes, and they're not like the Arctic salt marshes in Labrador and farther north either. They're sort of a hybrid halfway in between, so they're totally fascinating. And on top of that, there are huge eelgrass beds out there, which never cease to intrigue.
I'm joined here with Jessica Kukak, who's in the studio as well, who spent the summer in St. Paul's asking for everybody to fill out a survey, I think, right? So maybe she just joined in the conversation because she's familiar with this area too.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Jessica.
Bob, do you think people in St. Paul's and in the surrounding areas are aware of how interesting and how unique these species are, or, you know, being so close to such a rare salt marsh area?
I think all of us take something that we're really familiar with, probably a little too much for granted. When I first was working in the salt marsh area, the most important thing probably to the local people was that they looked like meadows, and they were incredibly good places for the sheep to be and the other livestock to graze. And I remember looking at some of the old sheds that were sort of falling down 30 years ago, and they had eelgrass for the insulation in the walls. So I suspect that it's always been important to the local people.
Eelgrass, I mean, sort of take me through a little bit the importance of that in terms of, is that important in terms of a site for juvenile codfish? Is that the big thing?
Eelgrass is important for all kinds of different things. It is a habitat for serving as a nursery area for a lot of things, like young salmonids when they're first going to sea. It's a very good feeding area for them. It can be important for codfish, but if you've got a lot of seaweed beds, they're just as good for the young cod. The St. Paul's one were incredibly important habitat for breeding herring. The herring would come in every spring, and there would be half an inch to an inch of herring eggs all over all the eelgrass leaves. And they have a whole lot of other importance as well. They stabilize the area and prevent erosion, and they support a whole lot of primary productivity, which serves as the food web for all kinds of other creatures.
So in terms of conservation or increased fish stocks, you see areas like St. Paul's Inlet as sort of crucial sites where we can change the trajectory in terms of some of these stocks?
I think they're incredibly important for supporting the larvae and the juveniles so that things can recover. And they're beautiful, too. You know, the reasons that they're important commercially are also the reason why there are so many seabirds and waterfowl and things like that there as well.
I suppose most of the people on the Seal Island boat tour aren't going out to see Member Pernora necessarily. They're enjoying the scenery there too.
Yes, yeah, and the seals are there for the same reason I am.
Competing with the seals.
Yeah.
When you think about the research seasons ahead, you know, are there some areas that you'd be interested in moving into, or some questions or species you'd like to look at? What would be, somebody plunked you down $1 million and said, go ahead and go crazy. What would you be researching?
I think one of the really critical things right now is climatic change and sea level change. That it seems to me the weather's gotten an awful lot worse, which is predicted by the climatic change. So I think the effects of increasing sea temperatures and sea level will be absolutely crucial to the area.
Are you seeing some of those small changes already in the last, you know, decade or something like that since we've been away?
Well, I suspect that the devastation of the imported species probably wouldn't be nearly so bad if it wasn't associated with the warmest seawater temperatures that we've ever seen in our lifetime.
So, it, you know, people talk about a change of even like 1 degree. It makes a pretty catastrophic difference to species, doesn't it? I mean,
Yes, I was thinking about it before I was observing it. I was thinking about it in terms of relatively minor changes in the distribution of a few things. But I think that it's going to be a lot more devastating, that the arrival of a few weeds probably could wipe out a whole lot of established things.
Sounds like science fiction.
It's scary.
Sometimes, especially in the news lately, we've been talking a lot about the melting of the Arctic shelves and so on. People think about rising sea levels as the real issue, but you're talking about warmer temperatures as being one of the things that's really going to spur this change.
Well, I think they're related. One of the things which people are very concerned about in the Arctic is the loss of sea ice in the summer, and I think what we should be worrying about in the Gulf of St. Lawrence is lack of sea ice in the winter. People tend to think of sea ice as not necessarily a good thing and, you know, kind of destructive and so on. But I think the systems we've got there kind of depend on the amount of sea ice that they've had in the past. And we may well have catastrophic changes if we don't have a nice solid ice foot or caterwauler on along the shore to protect it in the winter. Mm-hmm. We might get as bad as and boring as the Avalon Peninsula.
Say it isn't so. you're in a position where you get to see students coming in every year and learning about this and maybe having that first dive like you had that sort of changes their perspective on what they want to do. How does that affect your sense of optimism or whatever? Like when you realize that students are starting to get an appreciation for the value of the diversity that's there, then maybe behaviors can change. And do you see that happening as students are there?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the most encouraging thing about this work, mm-hmm. that we do see the children from the schools actually putting into practice things that they've learned about the conservation and so on, mm-hmm. in the sea, that when they become the fishermen or the town councillors or whatever, they understand these things. The other thing that we see an awful lot at the station is we get people coming through with their families who did courses there a decade ago or 2 decades ago or whatever, and they'll immediately start giving their families a lecture about how things work in the bay. And it's something from a course they did long ago, and they remember it all, and that's just so satisfying.
Mm, that must be. Well, thanks, Rob, for taking some time out to chat with us here on the radio station. And all the best in your continuing research and in the Bombay Marine Station itself.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll talk to you again.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.